Welcome to Watch Out, where we dig through our DVD dungeon, where we scour the endless streaming landscape, all to help you find some kick-ass horror movies.
Hello and welcome to the Watch Out Horror Movie Review Podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Our goal is to provide you with spoiler-free reviews and recommendations for both recent films and horror classics. And to not be boring, I am Jason the Terrible, broadcasting from Ottawa, Ontario, and I am joined from Vancouver, BC by Grave Robber Jeff.
Howdy.
And Slice and Dice and Dave.
Hello, everyone. Welcome.
Grave Robber Jeff, you sounded really happy just now.
Well, it's Sunday evening and can't complain, I guess.
We get to sit down and talk about some horror movies.
Some interesting horror movies, to be sure.
I watched something interesting last week. I slowed down a lot from the week before.
What did you watch there, Jason the Terrible?
This was actually a recommendation from one of our Twitter followers after I posted the message about watching all these masked home invasion movies.
What did you watch?
Yeah, so the Nightmare Fuel podcast, he liked that tweet where I listed those three movies with the connecting theme of masked home invasion, and he said, hey, you better check out Hush on Netflix. So, hey, I checked out Hush on Netflix, and I got to tell you, Nightmare Fuel podcast, I'm very glad I did.
I was going to say thanks for the heads up there, Jay. Maybe we all could have watched it.
Well, I'm giving you a heads up right now. You can go and watch it.
Well, it's too late because you're about to spoil it all for us.
No, I'm not going to spoil. This is what you would call a micro review, which I know you've had trouble with in the past there, Slayson.
Oh, I get quite pissed off. But go on. I'd like to hear.
All right. So this is a masked home invasion. I guess this is a subgenre now of horror. But the twist on this one is that the person being invaded is deaf and mute.
Wasn't that like that movie Don't Breathe or whatnot? Or what one was that?
Well, he was blind.
Oh, he was blind. Yeah, that was a good one.
And I guess none of the intruders wore masks. So.
Oh, because this is a masked home invasion. So he's deaf, but he can see them. Interesting.
Well, she's deaf, but she can see him.
Whoa, way to spoil it for me. I'm just kidding. I guess I was being a little, chauvinistic. Or presumptuous, thinking it was just a dude. But anywho.
Anyway, it's got a pretty similar setup to the I Spit on Your Grave movie. As our protagonist is alone in an isolated house. I mean, she's close enough within walking distance to her neighbors. But she is a writer, and she's isolated in her house, and she's deaf. And she's visited one night by a guy wearing a mask.
I hate to cut this up, but do you know what would be really interesting? Well, maybe it would be interesting for the first 15 minutes. Then it would get maybe not so interesting. But say they that whole movie was just like quiet. So it's as if you were her and you couldn't hear anything. And then she'd like turn around and all of a sudden there'd be like a masked intruder there and you'd be like, holy shit! But there was no sound at all. Does that make sense? Would that be boring?
Well, how do you know that's not what happened?
Oh, geez. Well, don't tell me then. I don't know. I have to go and watch it myself. Anyway, sorry for cutting you off. Go on there.
No problem. Well, I'm not going to go into much more detail than that. It's
that means I have to go and watch it.
The premise sounds like it would be awfully unfair and one-sided. They do a good job of stretching the concept out over its runtime, which is actually only an hour and 20 minutes. So, you know, great.
Ooh,
Robert
that's a good
Jeff, I thought this might be one that you would have reviewed by now since it's so short.
That's up my alley.
Ultimately, I enjoyed it. It was creepy. It didn't annoy me from a story perspective, but there are parts of it that did annoy me. I think they missed an opportunity to have some much stronger performances here. But that's all I'm going to say for now. It was enjoyable. I would recommend it for sure. I think I even rated it a 7.
Wowzers.
Yeah. I did, in fact, rate it a 7, and, you know, that's above average for me. Go check it out.
Right on. Well, thank you for that recommendation there, Jason the Terrible, and Nightmare Fuel Podcast. Thank you. Well, this week, what are we doing this week, fellas? It was like we were kind of a little all over the place with our reviews, you know what I'm saying? Which was fine, I suppose. But I thought I wanted to be kind of like a little more together. So I said, let's goddamn make little theme weeks for our micro reviews. And that way our reviews kind of have some sort of connection with one another, at least. So this week, Jason the Terrible came up with the idea of picking a movie from a franchise that didn't take part in our draft last week.
Yeah, and so if you haven't heard our draft episode, what the heck, go listen to it. It's basically 10 of the top slasher franchises. I don't want to ruin it for you. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. And then just know that when we come back to this episode, we're going to be picking horror franchises that are a little less popular than those. Sound good? Since Slice and Dice and Dave picked the main review this week, which, by the way, is Psycho Gorman, for all of you
Psycho Gorman
who are waiting anxiously to hear that review. You can check the show notes to see the timestamp of when we start that if you really want to skip ahead, but I would recommend sticking with us. All right, so Slice and Dice and Dave, is your scream sack ready?
Oh my god, let's open up the scream sack.
Slice and Dice and Dave, scream and scream sack up.
Thanks, everybody. I've opened up the scream sack, and here's a movie that is a pretty popular movie, I think. But to me, I've known about it, but I've always had this preconceived notion that, like, because you know, like when you buy a set, we'll bring up the Walmart DVD bin again. Say you buy a set with like 10 movies on one or two discs, and the transfer's just terrible, and the movies look awful. You know that type of collection?
Oh yes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I just had a feeling that it was just, if I ever watched it, it would just be shitty and old looking, and that it just wouldn't hit. You know what I'm saying? But I said, you know what? It seems to be a pretty popular movie of the horror genre, and I've never seen it, and there's a huge franchise because of it. So I decided to finally watch, from 1979, Phantasm. You guys ever hear of Phantasm?
Yes, I have seen Phantasm.
I'll be damned.
It's a good choice. Interesting, though, that you put off watching it because it was on your Walmart multi-movie disc.
To be fair, I never purchased it, and I've never owned it. But I just had this, like, I always thought that it would just be like this shitty, old-looking horror movie. And, to my surprise... Thank God for Tubi, everybody. I watched it on Tubi this weekend, and I'll be damned if there wasn't a remastered version on there. So I tell you what, it was high definition at its finest, and it looked lovely. Written and directed by Don Coscarelli, who you guys might know also directed one of my favorite, well, I guess it's not one of my favorite, but one of my favorite horror actors is in said movie. Baba Hotep. You know that one? Everybody knows Baba Hotep. So I'll be damned if he didn't direct this Phantasm movie from 1979, which was actually a really, really low-budget movie. I think it was something like $300,000 to make. And geez, I'll be damned if it hasn't made, like, I don't know, I think last time I looked it was like $22 million or something. You know what I'm saying? That's a lot of goddamn money for a movie that cost $300,000 to make. But yeah, this is where, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the legend of the tall man. Well, he's part of this one. This is one that I'm going to have to go off the board and say, you got to see it.
Now, how many Phantasms did they make?
There's four and then five, which was fairly recently. So I think there's five in the franchise, isn't there, Jay?
Sounds about right. Remember when we were talking about which franchises to include in our draft? Yes, I was trying to explain this one because I, for some reason, the name just escaped me for a couple seconds. And,
oh, is this the one that you were chatting about?
And I was trying to... It's the one with the silver balls. Come on.
Yes, like, well, that was this one.
The balls the with the blades that come out, you know.
What a bizarre film, this Phantasm. So let me just get into it. Basically, it's about this young guy, what's his name? Mike. Young kid, and he's got a brother, Jody, and we find out that his parents were killed early on, so he's kind of dealing with the grief of losing his parents and all this and all that. And there's another buddy named Reggie, who's an ice cream truck driver. Pretty cool ice cream truck driver, man. And he's got like a bald head, but like a ponytail. And he was super cool, man, considering that. So their buddy gets killed by this gal as they were kind of, getting it on in a graveyard, you see. And then they were all like, hey, well, you know, he committed suicide and stuff. But there must have been something more to it. Anyway, and then at the end of the funeral, that's where we see Mike, the young guy. He saw this tall man guy come by and basically just picks up the whole casket on his own and shoves it into the friggin' hearse. He's like, "How? That's a goddamn heavy casket. How can he do it on himself?" Anyway, from there on, he's like, "What the hell was that all about?" And then we get into basically the tall man and things. But I'm not going to get too much into it. But he does go and check out the mausoleum and the funeral parlory type place, you know. And it's quite bizarre at times. But I tell you what, there is this one funny ass part, man. I don't know if you'll remember it, but they unleash this like kind of weird ass fly creature in their house. And I'm watching it and I'm like, oh my God, that must have been hilarious to film. It's him and his brother like pretending they have this friggin' bug trapped in his coat and just like flopping it around and stuff. I said, oh my God, that would have been hilarious. Anywho, I was quite surprised and impressed and very happy in the end that I picked this one, because look at this. It was made in 79 and the year is 2021, and I got to experience it for the first time. And I'll tell you what, it held up. It was awesome. But yeah, I mean, flying chrome balls that stick in people's faces, the scary looking tall man, and just a little bit of mind effing and fingers being cut off and yellow goop and doing it in graveyards. Oh, and there's little hooded creatures that are running around and stuff. It's got it all, man. It's got it all. and then the end, it was like, huh? And then I kind of walked away giving it like a 3 out of 5, so like a 6 out of 10. And then I went to a movie store later that afternoon. And I'll be damned if it wasn't the Blu-ray was sitting there for $11.99. Now, I didn't purchase it, but I'm regretting that I didn't, because after going a whole day since I've seen it, I want to watch it again.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. And like, because I'm not 100% sure what happened in the end. I'm confused and I got to rewatch it. And now I got to watch them all. So there you go. Phantasm. Michael Baldwin, Michael Baldwin played Mike. Bill Thornbury as Jody, and Reggie Bannister as Reggie. And I'll be damned if Angus Scrimm wasn't the tall man. And we all know Angus Scrimm, unfortunately, who passed away in 2016. We all know him from Phantasm. But no, he's got 56 credits, a lot of cool horror movies. He was even in that TV series Alias. Oh, he was the narrator, the voice in Wishmaster. So that's kind of cool, you know what I'm saying? Munchies Strike Back, we all know Munchies. He's been in a bunch of cool stuff. Chopping Mall, everybody's seen Chopping Mall, haven't we?
I haven't seen Phantasm recently enough to remember much about it at all, actually. So you've piqued my interest to go back and watch it again. I think I have it on DVD.
I don't know. It's hard to say because, like, I know there's a lot of horror movie fans out there that collect VHSs of the old horror movies and like to watch them kind of from that era. I follow a lot on Instagram and stuff, and I think it's kind of cool that they still collect VHSs. I just find it awesome that you can watch a movie that was done from 1979 and it's still so clear and sharp 40 years later, and it just looked good. So I originally gave it 6 out of 10. But I've been thinking about it the past day and how much I liked it in junk. So I gave it, I think I bumped it up to, what the hell, to 7 out of 10. There you go. Which is pretty good, man.
I kind of wonder how they do such a good job at converting those old movies. Because they just have it on analog tape from back then, right? And then they have to convert it to digital somehow.
The film is really good high, or it's good quality, right? Because it's got to be clear in a movie theater junk. So then
I think the digital conversion involves actually scanning the film frame by frame.
Yeah, yeah. And think of it this way, like a DVD only has what, like 8 gigabytes, right? It can only be so clear on a DVD. That's why it's a lot clearer on Blu-rays and stuff, right? Because it's a bigger file. Anyway, so if you like flying chrome balls in your face and doing it in the, the cemetery, then this one's for you, fellas.
All right, thank you, Slice and Dice and Dave. Phantasm, 1979. Grave Robber Jeff, are you ready?
For what?
For your segment.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Woohoo! Grave Robber Jeff. Grave Robber Jeff.
Grave Robber Jeff's fresh dig.
I had a hard time because it's like, wow, off the top of your head, you got to think of something that you can search for on these streaming services, and hopefully they're on there. So I just sort of started browsing on Shudder for a bit. One movie showed up, just 1, 2, 3, bam, bam, bam. I'm like, yes, I think that counts. I'm going to watch the first one. And it's called Maniac Cop.
Nice choice.
Maniac Cop, yeah. Bruce Campbell.
Maniac Cop from 1988. Rated R. So one of the interesting things about this one is Bruce Campbell is in there. And of course, we all know and love Bruce Campbell. Yeah. What I didn't realize was like the timeline that The Evil Deads came out, not to make this about The Evil Deads, but the first one is like early 80s, 81 or 82, I think. And the second one wasn't until way up in 1987, 88, that sort of range. So I didn't realize there was such a gap there. But I think Bruce Campbell was getting a bit popular then. So when Maniac Cop came out in 1988, I think he was a good choice because he kind of fits that horror movie vibe. And so this one's about a killer dressed in a police uniform begins murdering innocent people on the streets of New York City. So pretty awful situation. The cops are supposed to be there to protect you. And like one of the opening scenes is someone running away from some muggers, running right toward the maniac cop. And it just, well, I guess since it's the opening scene, I can say, just kills the crap out of him.
No!
And you're like, oh, but he's a cop. Oh. And so from that point on, you know, something's amiss.
What something's kind of maniac indeed would do that to somebody?
That was actually one of my favorite scenes, because when the detectives and the cops are trying to figure out what's going on, they're talking about it, and one of them's like, so he's like a maniac cop. Yeah, it
they
sure
said
is.
It.
And so the name, I always thought the name was kind of cool, and so that was kind of neat that they brought it up in the actual movie. Yeah, it's definitely a very stereotypical slasher flick, I think. We've got like a murder on the loose. I thought the idea was kind of neat because, like we sort of said, like it's a cop and he's supposed to help people. I think story-wise it was a pretty simple story, but the characters, I thought each of them were pretty entertaining. Like Tom Atkins is in it. I don't know if you guys know Tom Atkins. He looks so familiar. I'm sure he's in a bunch of stuff. He was in Halloween 3, The Fog, My Bloody Valentine. But he's been in a lot of horror movies, and he's a very good character actor, I think. Yeah,
I saw that. I think that's a good one, isn't it?
So then playing Bruce Campbell's love interest is Lorene Landon. And I didn't find too much about her. And rounding out the cast, playing the commissioner is Richard Roundtree. I think he's been quite a few horror movies as well. The acting, I thought, was pretty good. And the story was pretty simple. And it's just people trying to figure out what's going on. Well, the killer is on the loose. So the only thing that I couldn't really figure out is that they kind of go through the origin story of this cop. And okay, I was like, okay, that makes some sense. But I couldn't figure out what his motivation was. And I read some reviews. People are saying, well, it's so obvious why he starts killing innocent people. And I'm like, what? No, it wasn't. It wasn't obvious at all to me. So I think I might have missed something there. And so there's kind of a disconnect for me because based on all the story, I couldn't figure out why I was killing innocent people. But putting that aside, I guess I would say it's a pretty enjoyable horror movie from the 80s. What I will say, though, is there's an insane stunt at the end that I thought was really cool. I had to like rewatch it like 10 times on the rewind there. Because sometimes I like just, well, sometimes you just let it roll from the start to the end. But if I see something at school, I'm like, wow, I got to see that again. So I kept rewinding it and I watched it in slow motion and stuff. And it was just a neat, stunt.
I got to see
it. But there wasn't any gore involved with it. It was just a neat stunt.
Interesting.
And
yeah, well, what's bizarre like to me is that, you know, I consider myself a pretty decent sized Bruce Campbell fan, and I've always known that he's in Maniac Cop. I used to see it in the video rental store back in the day and saying, oh, I got to see Maniac Cop. I have since purchased it and I've had it for probably about 6 years on Blu-ray, 5 or 6 years, and I still haven't seen it. So now I got to see it because you saw it before me and I feel completely left out. I'm interested in the stunt.
So I've got two questions for you, Grave Robber Jeff. What character does Bruce Campbell play, and is the identity of the maniac cop a secret at all during this movie?
It's not really a secret, but they don't know who it is, but they figure out who it is pretty quickly. So pretty much 75% you know what the guy's name is. So Bruce Campbell plays Jack Forrest, who is a cop, and he ends up getting framed for some of these murders. So that's kind of how he's involved. Gotcha. Yeah, but then the maniac cop himself, whose name is Matt Cordell. Oh, I didn't even say who played him. It's Robert Czar, and it seemed like that was his only role, but I could be wrong. Oh, he was in Tango and Cash. Get out of town.
Hey, that's like a Sylvester Stallone movie, is it not?
Yeah, he's been in a few, actually. And the director was William Lustig, who actually directed all three. Didn't find anything else that he did. But it's kind of neat that the same director did the whole thing. I don't know how often that happens. Yeah, so overall, I think if you're a fan of the slasher style, and if you like Bruce Campbell, why not watch it? Although Slice and Dice and Dave hasn't watched it, and I'd consider him a huge Bruce Campbell fan.
Yeah, it's weird, eh? I kind of feel like this is kind of me, and this is how I do things. I kind of like put off watching things because I want to watch them later. It's the most hypocritical, stupid thing in the world. It's like I own all the Ash versus the Evil Deads, right? I haven't watched them yet. It's because like as soon as I watch them, they're over. Is that just like the stupidest thing you've ever heard?
No,
but that's kind of how I look at it. Like it's like. Like, I bought, you know, season one, season two, season three, and I'm sitting there going, I should really watch it now. And I'm like, oh, well, as soon as you're done it, then it's friggin' over, blah, blah, blah. And that, like, I think that might be one of the reasons I haven't watched Maniac Cop. Anyway, that's just stupid and bizarre, but.
As The X-Files was winding down in its ninth season, you guys know how big of an X-Files fan I was.
Yeah, you're a big X-Files nerd.
Nice. And
well, it's true. Go on.
So
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
I mean, I guess it says something about the quality of season 9, but there was actually an episode that I missed. And I waited years to watch that last episode that I hadn't seen, just because I knew that as soon as I watched it, there would be no X-Files episodes to watch after that.
Yeah.
And so I didn't watch it until I at one point started again from the beginning and rewatched the whole series and then watched that episode in season 9 to finish it off. And yeah, it was an emotional time. And then a few years later, they came out with season 10 and 11, which ruined that emotional exercise. But I have strong opinions about there's strong ups and strong downs about season 10 and 11. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. Right on. Oh, hey, weren't we talking about Maniac Cop here, Jeff?
Jeff, did you give us a rating on Maniac Cop?
Well, rating-wise, I guess it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. So right in the six range again.
Yeah, the safe six. It wasn't low enough to be bad, but it wasn't high enough to be great.
The safe six. Yep. I like that.
There you go, fella. Excellent.
That's why if you're a fan of like certain actors, I think, why not give it a try, you know?
Yep. Right on,
Jeff. People must have liked it somewhat because they made two more.
Unless they didn't make any money on the first one and they're just a glutton for punishment. Losing money.
They're like, no, sure this idea is good. It's good, I tell you. We got to keep going. Try it one more time.
I swear you like this third one. Then by the fourth one, the wife is like, that's it, I'm out of here. It's like, okay, well, I better stop. No, okay, hey, thanks a lot, Jeff. Jason the Terrible, it's time for your DVD dungeon.
Hey, it's my turn.
Jason the Terrible's DVD dungeon.
All right, well, I like how you guys went and found a couple of franchises and you watched the first movie in those franchises. I did not watch the first movie in the franchise that I chose.
Oh, man. What way to throw a wrench in this whole thing there, Jason the Terrible? What are we talking about here?
Well, I dipped into the Puppet Master series.
Ah, the Puppet Master series.
I'm going to be talking about Puppet Master 4. Now, I'll tell you right off the bat that if you're looking for a way to get into the Puppet Master series, Puppet Master 4 is not the way to go. Out of the first four Puppet Master movies that I have seen, this is by far the worst. And, of course, this is produced by Charles Band for Full Moon Productions. The first Puppet Master was pretty cool. I was really blown away, actually, by the stop-motion animation on the puppets. Like, the puppets are the star of the show no matter what. And when you see them in the first movie, it's pretty cool to watch them. It's not a great movie, the first one. Second one is more of the same and still not very, you know, still not incredibly good. Number three was where I got really into it because it's kind of a prequel movie. There's a lot of Nazi and Axis components to the story because the creator of these puppets was on the run from Nazi Germany. The third movie tells his story and gives us a bit of a flashback into all of that. So you can see his origins and the origins of some of the puppets. And that's pretty cool. I really like the third movie. The fourth movie, it picks up in the weirdest place. You basically see this subterranean cavern full of all of these skulls strewn around. And you see some guys in robes marching around this cauldron. And there's this big guy overseeing them, and he's like a Jim Henson thing. And this is a weird parallel to the Psycho Gorman thing, because this could have come straight out of that. It's really hard to explain it because it looks so bad, but it starts with this big monster guy saying, oh, our secrets of artificial life and eternal life have been stolen. We must steal them back and punish whoever did it. And so in the first few scenes of the movie, we see a couple of AI scientists get attacked by, I guess, what looks like kind of a gremlin figurine that's been mailed to them. It's about as good as it sounds. So then we get into the meat of the movie, though, where we meet Rick Myers, played by Gordon Curry. Rick looks like a surfer dude, but he's actually a very intelligent AI scientist who's working out of, surprise, surprise, the same hotel that was the setting for Puppet Master 1 and 2. It's a bit weird. He invites his girlfriend over to this big empty hotel because, you know, he's the only one there. And his girlfriend, who's played by Chandra West, brings along her friend and her friend's obnoxious boyfriend. We've got Ash Adams as Cam, who you just want to punch the first time you see him. And we've got Teresa Hill playing Lauren. And this is her first credited feature, actually. Chandra West, by the way, I was trying to figure out who she reminded me of the whole time I was watching it. And I was getting kind of a Denise Richards from Tammy and the T-Rex feel. That's what I think was going on there. No comment.
I was going to say, I was going to say a classic, but then I thought against it.
That would have been hilarious.
All right, so just an extra note about Gordon Curry, who plays Rick Myers, the protagonist here. He is also Miles, the weather vane guy from Friday the 13th, Part 8. He was one of the students on the ill-fated boat trip. Thought he looked familiar.
Huh.
All right, so once our four characters are at the hotel and having some dinner, what should arrive on the doorstep but one of these gremlin-looking figurine things? And you know things are going to go bad from that point, because one of the things that our pal Rick Myers is working on is artificial intelligence, and it turns out he's actually been helping the other two scientists that were attacked. This guy, who looks like he'd be more happy skateboarding or surfing, is actually a very incredibly smart guy. Though he spends most of his time playing laser tag with his wind-up robots that he just can't get to have artificial intelligence. And he can't understand why he can't get his robots to be real robots. So we know that these gremlins will start attacking. What we don't realize is that the puppets from the Puppet Master 1, 2, and 3 movies, in this movie, they rise up to protect Rick Myers from the gremlin monsters. And this is not a surprise. The tagline of the movie is, "When bad puppets go good," or something like that.
Here it is. "When bad puppets turn good."
Oh, I almost had it. I think the biggest problem I had with this movie is the fact that these gremlin things that were sent by these really stupid-looking monsters in this really stupid-looking underground lair, there just wasn't a sense that it was all that dangerous. So you're being chased around this hotel by these little guys that you could probably turn around and kick, and you'd be fine. And somehow they built an entire movie around that, and they have the Puppet Master puppets coming to defend Rick and his friends from these gremlin demon guys. And so it's just a little corny. I mean, it's more corny than normal for a Puppet Master movie. What you do get, which is really good, is you get more awesome puppet stop-motion animation. These puppets are really, by this time you've watched three movies with them, they've really got more character than some of the real-life actors, to be honest. That's what makes it fun.
Is this one kind of a comedy, Jason?
No, it's not really played as a comedy.
Oh, interesting.
What's interesting that I found out after watching it, and which I think makes a big difference here, is that Puppet Master 4 and Puppet Master 5 were filmed back-to-back and were intended to be two parts of the same movie.
Hmm.
So what I felt was that at the end of Puppet Master 4, I'm like, what, that's it? It was almost too easy, and I think it's because it was setting up for the second half of the movie, which instead turned into Puppet Master 5. So you get a lot of the same cast. You have the same director directing both 4 and 5. It was directed by Jeff Burr. He also directed Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, and Pumpkinhead 2, and Stepfather 2. So he has, you know, he's got some horror cred here. I think the problem with it, though, is that this movie had 5 writers. It was written by Joe Duffy, Todd Henschel, Stephen E. Carr, Keith Payson, and Douglas Arniokoski. And most of these people only have 2 writing credits, and those are Puppet Master 4 and Puppet Master 5. Joe Duffy, though, by the way, is a writer for Marvel Comics in the 80s. She wrote a heck of a lot of the flagship Marvel Comics series in the 80s. So I think that probably makes a lot of sense that a movie like this would have the same comic book feel to it, I guess. Like I said, if you were to pick a Puppet Master movie to watch, like if you were over at a buddy's place and they're like, "Hey, let's watch Puppet Master 4, I would put your foot down and say, "No, let's watch Puppet Master 3.
I should see that happen. But I am still interested in Puppet Master, but not so much after this particular review.
Well, that's like a backhanded compliment if I've ever heard one, but
it sure is.
No, as a whole, for the first 4 movies, I would say Puppet Master is worth watching because it really is very cool what they do with the stop motion animation, and there's a lot of imagination to it. There's a behind the scenes feature on one of these cheapo DVD sets, amazingly enough, that shows just how much puppeteering went into these things, and it's quite impressive. So, but yeah, like I said, I don't know why I'm doing the review on number 4 if I thought number 3 was so good, but I think what I have to do is go back and watch number 5 and see if the story concludes itself in a satisfying way. But yeah, Puppet Master 4, I got to give it a big fat 4 out of 10. And if you haven't watched any of the Puppet Masters, start with number 1. You could jump straight into number 3 since it's a prequel. You wouldn't be missing out on much. It's an interesting series. It's one that you should see just because there's not a lot like it out there.
Copy that, Jay. I am interested in the stop-motion animation of the puppets. And a couple puppet deaths and things. How exciting. Like the dude with the drill on his head, he looks pretty creepy. You know what I mean?
They've all got their own names, too. That's Tunneler. You've got Blade, the one that looks like a Guy Fox mask. Pinhead.
Oh, just like the Hellraiser guy.
Different kind of pinhead.
What?
And actually, this is another negative about number four, is that a couple of the puppets in number four have nothing to do. They're just kind of standing around, like, making faces, which is impressive for puppets, but, you know, not so much for action. All right, so that's Puppet Master 4, 1993.
Woohoo!
All right, Slice and Dice and Dave, why don't you bring us into our feature review?
And now watch out for our feature presentation.
Thank you, Jason the Terrible. This week, I wanted to pick a movie that was out fairly recently on Shudder, but I didn't want to watch it right away. I wanted to give it like a month or two before we dove into it. So I figured this was a good time. I picked from 2020, Psycho Gorman.
Is it Gorman or is it Gorman?
Probably Gorman, but Gorman. It just sounds cooler. Or maybe it doesn't, but anyway.
Many moons ago, a nameless evil was imprisoned in a place far beyond reach.
Hurry up!
If he were ever to be released, it would spell certain doom for all existence.
Is that fear I smell? Your planet will be torn to pieces, and I will
Mimi,
treat your screams as I rip.
Is this yours? Speak?
Oh, my God.
The gem of Paraxidike. Whoever wields it is able to command me.
Go over there. And wait for us to come back in the morning.
You will suffer an eternity for this.
Bye! Mom, Dad, I want you to meet Psycho Gorman, or PG for short.
I will bathe in your blood.
Don't worry.
Be worried. Go down!
He's gonna kill everybody. Not unless I tell him to.
What did you three maniacs get up to?
This is getting a little weird.
This sick game must come to an end. She will enslave the galaxy into endless servitude.
Kill him!
Cool. He will not stop killing me
till they're blood. The ultimate evil has awoken.
God in town. And his name? Psycho Gorman. It was nice meeting you.
It would be nicer if you were dead.
All right, bye.
That was the trailer. And here is the synopsis from Internet Movie Database itself. After unearthing a gem that controls an evil monster looking to destroy the universe, a young girl and her brother use it to make him do their bidding. Tell you what, fellas. If some producer would approach me back when I was like 7, 8 years old and said, hey, here's like $1 million, write us a friggin' horror movie. Well, I tell you what, fellas, this is precisely what I would give them as a horror movie from my 7-year-old brain. It was far out. It's funny because I was like, hey, wife, I'm going to be watching a couple movies. Do you want to watch one of these with me? And she's like, she looks at the reviews and all this and all that. And she's like, yeah, I'll watch Psycho Gorman with you. I said, what? I was like, okay. I didn't really know anything about it. So I was like, well, why the hell does she want to watch this? This doesn't seem like one that she would want to watch.
To be honest, I've got scenes of it in my head running through my head right now, and I'm speechless about how to properly explain them.
Well, it's like there's a lot of jokes that are super obvious. This is the one thing I took out of the movie, was when he's looking at that magazine of handsome dudes. And then he says the line, and me and the wife are like, we said the line before he even said it, right? But it was effing funny, right? Even though it was obvious.
We brought you some reading material, PG, and a TV to watch. Did you sleep okay? I'm sorry we didn't bring any pornos.
Petty displays of wealth. How can your short lifespans allow such narcissism?
Yeah, but look at all the hunky boys.
I do not care for hunky. Funky Boys. Or do I?
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit, because
no.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay. What's up?
Well, so you mentioned the synopsis.
Oh yeah, I guess, so this little gal and little guy are playing in their backyard. They make up all these weird ass games, and for some reason they had to dig a big ass hole.
Well, hang on, don't gloss over it. We got to talk about Crazy Ball.
No, we don't.
Which I think is one of the funniest lines I've ever heard. I'm not going to be able to do it any justice, but I got to give the actress who plays Mimi credit. Now, this is Nita Josie Hanna, who plays Mimi. She was also in Books of Blood, but I think this one came first and was her first feature. I mean, her enthusiasm in this movie sometimes is a bit much, but it really sells the story at the beginning, just how nutso this little girl is.
Well, this is the
thing.
Let me just explain to everyone. Like, this particular character is just off the rails, way, like, over the top. The actress there, that Nita Josie Hanna, is just phenomenal at play. Because, I mean, that's what they wanted, is this extremely annoying, awful girl. She just pulled it off brilliantly, some might say.
The line that still makes me laugh in my head, it's not the line, it's the way she says it, is when she's being tucked in by her parents.
Mimi, I don't want to keep going through this, okay? Remember what we said last time you were playing Kooky Ball?
It's Crazy Ball!
That's the one.
Kooky Ball.
She's like, it's Crazy Ball!
Yeah, that's the gal for you.
I'm in that boat. That stuck out to me right away, and I do agree that she played a very annoying character, and I guess she did too good of a job, because as the movie went on, she just got more and more annoying. it was just hard to watch her after a certain point, but I think for what they were going for, she delivered for sure.
What they're really trying to go for is they're giving the power of death and destruction of the universe to someone like that.
Yeah. it's kind of like, who's the real monster in this movie? You know what I'm saying? Is it Psycho Gorman? Or is it that little turkey? What the hell's her name? Mimi.
Well, I know what the answer is. But anyway. So after a spirited game of Kooky Ball...
It's Crazy Ball! It's Crazy Ball! I know you set it up for me, but I was a little behind. Anyway, go on.
After a spirited game of Crazy Ball, the penalty for losing is to get buried alive, and so they dig this incredibly deep hole all before 9 o'clock at night, because that's their bedtime. But they manage to find the impregnable vault prison of one... Well, we don't know his name at first.
Yeah, but what the hell is it doing on Earth? That's one thing. I was like, what the hell is it doing on Earth?
Well, Earth is obviously a prison planet. So.
All right.
Anyway, so Mimi somehow is able to free this creature, but, you know, they fill in the hole before anything too bad happens.
Yeah, I don't know if now's a good time to bring up the dad character, because pretty much, like, every character... Can we say in the entire movie was probably dialed up to ridiculous levels? And the dad, for sure, he's kind of a deadbeat dad. And so one of the funny things at the beginning is when they're trying to decide who should fill the hole back, and then somehow he gets appointed to do it, and because he's kind of just a pushover, I guess, but then he does one shovel, and then he hurts his hand, and the next scene you see it all wrapped up in a bandage. It's just like things like that were just pretty funny, I have to say.
Yeah, it's definitely our type, I can't speak for you guys, but definitely my type of comedy in this particular horror movie. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, so listeners, let's make something really clear off the start. This is a goofball comedy horror movie.
Hey, would this be considered a gormedy?
I think it might.
Oh my God.
I was thinking that pretty much the whole time. And this is what happens when you give someone a limited budget with an unlimited imagination. And it's amazing that they pulled off what they did. But this...
Oh, for sure.
You know, this is Jim Henson-style Muppet effects. This is practical effects. This is awesome practical effects. Because, you know, had they done this with CGI, it would not have the same effect. What makes this movie so unique is... the practical effects and the alien creatures and all the... It's just, it's hard to explain how visually interesting this movie is.
Visually appealing. Appeasing, even.
There's just so many random types of aliens. It's insane. I don't know how people come up with these things.
No doubt. And then, well, anywho, let's get back to the story here, you freaks. So basically, you know, they find this thing and... She takes the one big gem out of there of the thing and she keeps it to herself. And then during the night, this goddamn creature comes out and then leaves. And then that's when we're introduced to a few scumbags that were out about town stealing from people. And that's where we see our first interaction with our main character, who eventually gets named Psycho Goreman. So he runs into these people, and that's when we realize that this son of a bitch is one mean son of a bitch, and he means business. Am I right?
Well, hang on. We had the voiceover and the introduction explaining just how bad this guy is, right? So you know that letting him out of your backyard could spell doom for the rest of the universe. Evidently, he works very slowly, but, you know, person by person, the way that he dispatches these thieves is pretty brutal.
I tell you what, man, like everything about the galaxy and the universe and everything, when they cut to the scenes, you know, in the past and everything, like, those were such sweet scenes, man. It's not like this is a huge budget movie, and, like, what they did was awesome, I thought.
Yeah, so immediately after these thieves are dispatched, you have Mimi and her brother, Luke, showing up. They've followed his trail to this abandoned shoe factory. Now you're like, oh my god, he just brutally slaughtered these full-grown thieving men. What's he going to do to these kids?
Oh, he's going to kill them. He even says it.
But it turns out... that Mimi has a way of controlling this.
Oh, it must have been that ass-sucking gem she stole, eh?
Spoilers.
Well, hold on. She's holding it in the picture, is she not?
Hold on. You always say spoilers whenever I talk about something.
Didn't I read it after unearthing a gem that controls an evil monster looking to destroy the universe? A young girl and her brother use it to make him do their bidding. I don't, you know what, I think I'm going to give myself a pass on that one. Anywho, go on.
So Mimi is able to control this universe destroying monster and gives him a name, Psycho Goreman, or PG for short, and gives him homework to do. And, you know, essentially this is a movie of my pet alien monster and all the trouble that, did we figure out how old she was? Was she like,
oh,
she
God,
seems
I can't
to be
remember.
Like a 10-year-old.
Yeah, something like that, I would think.
So, you know, all the trouble that a 10-year-old could get up to with a monster that could potentially destroy the universe. This is written and directed by Stephen Kostansky, who is primarily known as a makeup effects artist for a ton of movies like Wrong Turn 4, Silent Hill Revelation, Resident Evil Retribution, Girl House, which was an Ottawa-filmed movie, It, and the Hannibal TV series.
He directed a movie that I was, like, really super pumped to see back in the day, The Void. But, yeah, he did Leprechaun Returns, the latest Leprechaun. And he did a short movie called Biocop. Do you know what's interesting about that one, fellas?
Well, there seems to be a callback to that in this movie.
There sure is, pal. It seems like that's the case. But anyway, yeah, no, he's... he even did Suicide Squad and Crimson Peak. What a successful dude in the film industry.
Yeah, well, he did those movies as a makeup effects artist, right?
So you know his movie that he directs is going to be fantastic.
Well, you know that he's going
to
be able
to... makeup effects.
You know that he's going to be able to put together very good effects on a shoestring budget if he has to, because he probably knows all the tricks.
But yeah, man, like, it's there's a lot of torture going on here. You know what I'm saying? That psycho gore man, he means business, man. Like, not only does he just kill people brutally, he also tortures them endlessly. Well, did you see what he did to that police officer?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then the one guy... you remember when the little boy, like, accidentally knocks over that one guy and his head mushes? That was pretty good. But anyway.
So, to sum up the rest of the plot, there's a universal police force or some bunch of aliens that are aware that Psycho Goreman has been reawakened and is going to come to Earth to get rid of him. While all of this is happening, Mimi's family is coming apart at the seams. This is the driving force behind the story.
See, now this is interesting because everything that I love about this movie, a little bit too much of something so good, can also become a bad thing. It's like by the end, I'm kind of like, okay, well, this type of comedy, you know, we've been dealing with for an hour and a bit already, and it's just a little too much now. And by the end, I found it a little annoying.
Yeah, I definitely had that feeling, as I kind of mentioned before, with the girl became more annoying. And I think by the midpoint to the end, I was just more interested in the spectacle of it, like all the costumes and the visual effects rather than the story itself.
The problem is the family, there wasn't much to like about the family, right?
That is a good point.
The dad was this dinkwad. The mom was okay, I guess, but
the dad was a little lovable, though. Like, you didn't get a sense until later in their conversations that the mom was very unhappy with him. He just seemed like a goof, right?
A super goof, man. You can tell by how he hurt his hand while he was trying to dig that or cover up that hole.
And how he made chicken for the family.
Destroyed the microwave. See, there's funny things about this particular movie. A lot of funny things.
Well, it's gag after gag after gag. It's practical effects that make you gag. And there's a whole cast of aliens that are just as visually striking as Psycho Goreman. There's just so much going on.
So yeah, so then Psycho Goreman like runs into some aliens from his planet or whatever. And they get into a bit of a scuffle. And just the fight itself was just so dumb. I don't know if you guys felt that. Just the way they were fighting was so ridiculous. Like these are not super aliens, and like, and then like they're kicking the crap out of Psycho Goreman, even though, like, even if he didn't have his powers, he should still be able to take him. You know what I'm saying?
Well, those aliens should have a little bit more power than what they had. As far as I'm thinking.
Well, I'm thinking that they look cool and they should have been more devastating. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes. I agree.
Still, there's some pretty over-the-top special effects in that fight scene. What can only be described as a walking vat of severed heads.
Yeah, that was a weird creature.
That was a weird one. It's like a cross between Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and The Muppets. And evidently the first scene of Puppet Master 4.
Don't bring up Puppet Master 4 again. Good God. The only thing is, like, because the movie is so unbelievable and they're embracing the unbelievability of everything, it just almost gets a little, by the end, annoying, I find.
It's very cartoonish.
Yeah. It's not a serious movie here, fellas.
And it's not even really that over-the-top gory either. It makes you think it is more than it is.
Oh, no, there's some gory scenes, but you're right, it's not over the top, that's for sure.
I mean, there's a scene that reminded me of the acid bath scene from RoboCop, so there's that. I mean, for a movie called Psycho Goreman, it could have been a lot worse.
I was just gonna say, is at the same time, it was like, maybe you aren't riveted by the story so much, but there's so much going on that's just ridiculous, and it is overall entertaining.
So why would you recommend it to someone, Grave Robber Joe?
Just because of the visual spectacle of it, and just the corniness of the humor.
Yeah, there's not too many movies like this out there, as far as I'm aware.
It kind of gave me, like, Uncle Peckerhead vibes to a degree.
What about, like, yeah. Mars Attacks or something like that?
I've never seen Mars Attacks, which is hilarious.
Yeah, neither have I. Forget I said that. But no, I'm falling back on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because there were some weird-looking practical effect aliens in there.
Because what was that thing you said, Dave, that reviewer said? Because that kind of summed it up pretty well.
Oh.
That you have to embrace the unbelievability of it all or something.
Oh, that was me that said it.
Oh, well, that made sense.
Oh, thanks.
Because, yeah, you have to kind of accept it's just that kind of movie and just enjoy it for what it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, and you have to do that pretty quick. Like, and you kind of see what type of a movie it is right off the bat with how the kids are acting and stuff. And then the unbelievability of everything by the fact that they dug such a massive hole. Like, so right off the bat, you know, you get the kind of taste of what type of movie it's going to be right off the bat.
I didn't have a problem setting aside believability and seeing where they would go with it.
But like, what do you guys think of Psycho Goreman? Like the character? I just loved his banter, like how like he was saying, "I'm gonna kill you kids," and like you're gonna feel the pain much and all this and all that, but he can't do it because she's controlling him. But I just thought that was effing hilarious.
Because I had no idea what this movie was about at all. Like I didn't see the trailer or anything. And yeah. So I kind of got the sense at the beginning with the annoying kids that it wasn't necessarily a serious movie. But then the time that he appears to take out the first few guys, you're like, whoa, this might be an intense, brutal movie. And then it just switches as soon as they interact with the kids. And then it's like, what? Oh, okay, so that's what kind of movie it is.
You're right, because for a minute there, you kind of feel like, oh, hey, this is going to be a really gory, brutal movie, isn't it? But anyway, fellas, well, what else, is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into our ratings and such?
Well, we should talk about the fact that Matthew Nineber played Psycho Goreman, the physical manifestation, and that Stephen Glahos was Psycho Goreman's voice. So if you were impressed by his banter, that's the guy you should thank. And there's quite a few characters in here where they have a physical actor playing them and someone completely different doing the voices. So that makes it hard to summarize everybody. Wanted to say that Adam Brooks plays Greg the dad and Alexis Kara Hansi plays Susan the mom.
Kind of on a side note about Matthew Nineber in the trivia section, because he spent all his time in costume, that whenever he wasn't in his makeup, they would call security on him because they didn't know who he was. So I found that kind of funny.
Do you know what's funny about that? Like, it's hilarious because, you know, I've been working in the film and TV business the past year and a bit during the pandemic, right? And we all wear our masks all day long. I've been on a show now, and I'm in my second season of working on the show, and I don't know what maybe 60% of the people's faces actually look like. And I've worked with them for 13, 14 hours a day for like almost a year now, and I still don't know what they look like. Isn't that bizarre?
So that's just a mask. Imagine being in a head-to-toe rubber suit.
Yeah, there you go, man. That's hilarious. I could see that happening, for sure.
We did mention that it was a Canadian movie, right?
We didn't, actually. And that surprised me, because I watched it the whole way through, and I was quite surprised that it was a Canadian movie after. I was like, I'll be damned, good for you guys.
So this movie won Best Feature Film at the Celluloid Screams Film Festival in Sussex. It won Best Feature Film at Monster Fest in Australia, and it won Best Feature Film at the Philadelphia Film Festival. It was supposed to open at South by Southwest, but that was canceled due to COVID the year that it came out.
Goddamn COVID.
Owen Meyer plays Luke, and for such a young actor, it's a bit interesting here that he's actually directing his first movie right now, called 14, and it's in post-production. And he's starring in Terrifier 2, which is also in post-production. All right, so we've talked about just how crazy, over-the-top, and corny this movie is.
Do you see like a resemblance? Like, I keep seeing this picture when he's dressed up with his like cowboy hat on and the shirt over and the glasses. He kind of reminds me of the Creeper from Jeepers Creepers.
I was just going to say that.
You got to be kidding me.
I was honestly just going to say that.
Huh, I'll be damned. Great minds think alike.
Because I think I noticed something familiar that I couldn't put my finger on until you just said.
But it's funny because like throughout the whole, like, he doesn't necessarily look too much like him. Like, it's just that particular scene when he's walking around in the clothes there.
It's because that's what the Creeper dresses up like too.
That might have been it. All right, fellas, should we get to our ratings of things? the scary factor. This movie isn't scary at all. So if you're looking for some frights and some jumps, this isn't that type of movie. It's very low. I'd give it a 1 out of 10.
I gotta echo the wisdom of Grave Robber Jeff, though. It's no Walk Through a Field of Flowers.
Well, and, I guess it's not.
Yeah.
And you were even saying at the beginning, before we know exactly what direction this movie's going in, it is a bit creepy, and what he does to those thieves is a bit more than you expect at the time. So
yeah, that's right. That's why I gave it a 1 out of 10. Or else it would have been a 0.
I'm giving it a 2. It's twice as scary as you think it is, you feeble-minded.
I guess you're right. Grave Robber?
Yeah, sure. I'll say 2s as well.
More enthusiasm.
How can you have more enthusiasm for a scary rating that's not scary?
Touche. Well, that does our scary rating. Gentlemen, let's talk about some gore. For a movie called Psycho Gore Man, it's got to be pretty gory, right?
It's gory, but it's a gormity. It takes the edge off some of it, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
Now, it is all 100% practical effects as far as the gore, I believe.
Is that confirmed?
Well, I'm just saying from my expert opinion. Maybe I'm plus or minus 2%, but give me
some.
Well,
that's good because you're not a fan of the CGI stuff. So even if, say, some of it was CGI, it didn't bother you and it looked good, you're saying.
I mean, there are obviously some effects in there that are enhanced by CGI, which is the way you should do it, right? But there's a couple of times when, with the power of his mind, Psycho Gorman picks up Luke and spins him around in the air. Obviously, yeah, that's not done practically. But as far as all the gore and the violent scenes and stuff, I think it's all... And I think, Grave Robber, that's why that fight you didn't like so much. It was basically a bunch of people in very intricate rubber suits and lots of red liquid flopping at each other.
Maybe. If it was like, kind of like, I don't know if you guys know what live action role play is, where a bunch of guys get in the park and like dress up and hit each other with sticks. Like, that's what it seemed like to me.
Well, maybe that's the vibe they were going for.
Because apparently there was an ode to the creator of Dungeons and Dragons by the name of the planet that the Gore Man came from, Gygax. Oh, that was one of the names of the creators of Dungeons and Dragons.
So what does that have to do with meeting in a park and beating each other with sticks while wearing costumes? Oh, wait.
Because LARPers are Dungeons and Dragons fans, I would think.
You said LARPers?
Yeah, that's what they call themselves. Live action role play.
Oh, interesting.
You seem to know a lot about these LARPers.
That's where you go every weekend and I can't get a hold of you. Your secret's out, pal. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So anyway, gore. I'm going to give it a big fat 6 out of 10 because it's a little more than average, but not quite like extreme. You know what I'm saying? Maybe even a 6.5 out of 10. It's pretty, there's a couple like gory scenes, you know?
Well, the thing is, like, if you take the one scene into consideration, it's pretty over the top. But then the rest of the movie isn't. So what do you do with that?
You tell us, pal.
So overall, it would be moderate, in my opinion.
With a couple of scenes of over the top.
Yeah. Because I don't want to say moderate and then people expecting no gore at all and then seeing the one over the top scene, you see.
Which over the top scene are you talking about?
What he does to the guys at the beginning.
Because there's also the scene with the cop.
Yeah, that's pretty
which
gross.
Which is pretty gory. And then
yeah,
there's
he just turns them into a monster, though. It's not...
There's a whole bunch of skin melty things going on.
It's pretty gross, pal.
I was going to mention the cop, the turned cop. He was quite entertaining.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
And the fight with all the aliens. I mean, there's a bucket full. There's an alien that is essentially a walking bucket full of severed heads. That's pretty over the top, gory.
But his way of fighting was just shooting blood at the guy.
I'm not saying he was a master combatant. I'm just saying that he was pretty gory.
Me and the wife were sitting there going, what the hell is this guy doing? Just splooging blood all over.
Like it's hitting funny, gore, man. He's going, oh. I don't know if it was like acid or what.
That was pretty good. Anywho, so moderate as per Jeff. I gave it a 6.5, so a little more than moderate. Jason, what are you talking about gore here?
It's moderately severe. If it was as intense as some of those scenes throughout the whole movie, then it would be as severe to severely over the top.
Yep,
but
yeah.
You also have a waddling brain that, you know, like there's just too much corny goofiness going on to take the gore seriously.
Yeah. Gentlemen, what do we talk about here? We talk about hoots and such. Besides for a couple pictures of hunky men, there's not really much schmecks and nudity, is there?
Oh, well, it's a movie based around a couple kids, so.
Okay, what's our last thing? Disturbometer? I mean, what's disturbing is how the young gal acted to everybody. What a horrible little gal. That's disturbing.
I wouldn't say it was that disturbing. I think the most disturbing thing for me was the brain boy.
Oh, yeah, that was too bad.
Poor you know, guy. But they were playing that up to get your sympathies through the whole movie.
Yeah, although there were a couple guys who suffered quite a bit.
But in a disturbing way?
Kinda.
Yeah, that's true, man. Anyway.
Let's move on to our final ratings. All right, I'm coming in with a 7 out of 10 on Psycho Goreman. I think just because it's a crazy over-the-top movie that was made with very little budget and a lot of love for the genre. They're kind of creating their own genre. They're going over the top and it's corny, but it's pretty fun to watch and put your feet up for an hour and a half and enjoy. I don't think you're going to find another movie like this.
Definitely a unique movie, that's for sure.
The Grave Robber Jeff, what is your final rating?
Yep.
I share the same view as you, Jason the Terrible, that just because there's nothing like it, you got to see it to believe it. So I gave it a 7 as well.
Thought you were going to go way off the board there for a second. Like maybe
if the story, if the characters weren't so annoying, it would have got higher marks from me.
Slice and Dice and Dave, you picked this one. Were you disappointed?
Not by any means, guys. And actually, you might be surprised that I'm coming in with an 8 out of 10.
Ooh, controversial.
There just isn't much like it. And I mean, yes, it kind of got a little too much for me, but that doesn't take away that the first chunk of the movie was just, in my opinion, really awesome and enjoyable and hilarious. So I got to take that into consideration. I also got to take into consideration that it was only $1.5 million Canadian to make.
That's like $575 American.
But what I'm trying to say here is that's not that much money, and look at what they did with it. Like, that's a pretty cool movie for such a low budget. Cool costumes and the special effects and the makeups and the, you know what I mean? So, I mean, and I want to see more of movies kind of like this, so why not give it an 8 out of 10? I enjoyed it. I'm glad I watched it. And I'll probably watch it again someday.
I just want to bring up the tagline because there's a little double entendre there. So,
little girl, big psycho?
Little girl, big psycho. Now, at face value, you're thinking, okay, it's the little girl and the big psycho gore man. But I really think that big psycho means little girl as well.
She's a little girl and a big psycho.
And she's in charge of a force of universal destruction. Yet somehow we rated this movie 2 out of 10 on the scare factor.
What an experience.
All right, gentlemen, any final words?
No, fellas. It was enjoyable. I had to pump these movies in really quickly on the weekend. Unfortunately, I was running out of time, but I'm sure glad I did. I had two enjoyable movies I got to watch this week.
Well, that was a good pick by you, Dave.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm happy that in 2020 we're still getting movies like that being made. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, big time.
All right, everybody, we would love to hear what you think of Psycho Goreman. Drop us a line at watchouthorror@gmail.com. Or you can connect with us on Twitter @watchouthorror. Or on Instagram @watchouthorrorcast. Slice and Dice and Dave can be reached at Slice and Dice and Dave on Twitter.
Hey guys, before we take off this week, I just want to bring up we had a listener's email. come into our old inbox. Because occasionally people send us some email. Can Sweet. You believe that? Yeah. This one's from Colin. And the subject is animated series. This must have been a couple weeks back when we talked about, what the hell was that? The He-Man one coming out. And then we made fun of you for watching Jem. Do you remember that?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up again.
Well, Colin says, come on, guys. You wouldn't want to see a redo of Muppet Babies? How about Tailspin? Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers? Well, well, thanks, Colin. Thanks for the email. First, you know what? They've actually... I know this because I loved Muppet Babies. But they have done a remake of that. And it's not very good, unfortunately. And then, yeah, I mean, Tailspin. I prefer Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. It's funny that we don't get too many emails. And this one has nothing to do with horror. It has to do with our discussion on animated kid shows. So thank you, Colin.
So maybe that's where we should take our podcast.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I guess so.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Until next time. And there will be a next time. Be safe. Treat each other well. And go watch some horror movies. Kooky ball, is it?
Kooky ball.
Thank you for listening to Watch Out. The opinions you've just heard have been made by three guys from Canada. Please keep this in mind and enjoy responsibly.
Generally, what happens is they add a couple...
Uh-oh, hold on. Jeff, they're coming to get you. Get out of there, man. Run. Forget about the podcast.
I live downtown. Oh, my God.
Okay, go on, Jason the Terrible.
I still hear the sirens.
They managed to find the impenetrable? That's it. They managed to find... Jeff?
What?
He went LARPing. Skip.
All right, so...
Quote, I do not care for hunky boys. Or do I? The horrors you have just witnessed cannot be unseen. Your young minds will carry this until it consumes you in a miserable death. Cool. I don't want to die. Then live forever. Right? Anyway.
Well, it was nice Alistair. To meet you. It would be nicer if you were dead.
All right, bye. I love those quotes. Nice. So
it's crazy ball!
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Probably just woke up my kids doing that.
So, oh man. Okay, go on there, Jeff.
Well, yeah, I share the same sentiment.
They did dig a hole.
Yep. I share the same sentiment. Oh my God, I can't say that word.